With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Star Wars Day, everybody. I'm Matt Working. I'm joined, as always, by Joe Kitchen. Joe, how did you spend your Star Wars Day?
I worked. Did a lot of working. But I am in the midst of watching Rebels right now, so like, there's that. But yeah, may the fourth be with you, man.
Yeah.
May the fourth be with you.
Yeah, like, Empire's on my TV right now. Like, every screen.
Lots of Star Wars memes today on, like, every single subreddit out there.
Yeah, then Disney Plus had a whole big deal, of course, because they own all Star Wars. And then pretty much most of the big brands have some type of, like, Star Wars theme. Like, I know, like, Instagram, you could change your, like, messaging theme to, like, a Star Wars theme or something like that.
It's crazy how it has become so mainstream. Yeah. Like, it's not like Star Wars wasn't always, you know, a mainstream pop culture thing, but...
I think it's the Disneyfication of Star Wars.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Because so ubiquitous that, like... So I remember, like, 10 years ago, one of my closest friends got married today. But it wasn't... It was, like... And, you know, like, I was like, oh, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. Star Wars Day, you know? But it wasn't, like, a big deal. It wasn't all over the internet and all that
it's
stuff.
It's Teacher Appreciation Week.
Yes.
Right now. And my wife... So, like... Every day at her school, they're like, they'll have like something for them, you know, like they give them lunch and stuff like that. And she said today, they had a like a candy bar, so like I guess a table where they had candy that they could pick up, and it was Star Wars themed, and they gave all the teachers like these nice Star Wars pens. So yeah, it's like it is seeped into like the public workspaces.
Well, like, even like Baylor, like the. Like Pat Neff, they played like the Star Wars music with the bells today, like for 10 minutes.
I love it.
They played like the Star Wars theme.
It makes me think back to when I was in fourth grade and I was obsessed with Star Wars. And one of my friends, her name was Rachel Simon, was her name, I think. I think that was her name. But she was like super into Star Wars too. And she got like, the like this encyclopedia essentially of Star Wars, and she and I would spend recess
so
just like
sweet.
Reading it. It was so awesome.
It's such an amazing gift.
And like we were weird kids.
Correct.
That was like, fourth grade, so like that would have been you would have been like in high school probably.
What year was that?
Oh man, I don't know when fourth grade was.
When's fourth grade?
Hold on. Like, I think I got, I probably would have been like 97 or 98, somewhere around there.
Like 97, like I graduated high school.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would have been an elite thing for you to have had back then. And you could have, you were old enough to get that for yourself.
Yeah. In 97, I wasn't as into Star Wars as I am even now or when I was a child. I was more doing like 18-year-old shit.
Yeah. You know? Okay. Fair enough.
You know, I was like, can I, who's got weed? You know, stuff like that.
That goes then, well with Star Wars.
Watching Star Wars.
But you weren't sitting there like, here's the background on how Mace Windu.
Because I had all that like original. Because whenever I was a child, like it was like in the heyday of like the first like trilogy, right? So you're talking like when I was like 5 years old, it was like Return of the Jedi came out.
So like, they re-released the original trilogy on VHS when I was like, I want to say eight, something like that. And my dad bought it, and that was when it started. Like he bought the box set. Like at that time,
I remember
like the prequels.
They did the 97, like in 97 they did like a George Lucas like re-released it.
I remember the re-releases. Added it was before that. It was because like we had the VHSs
that was like
did not have the CGI in them.
798, somewhere around there, they did like the VHS.
Yeah,
they
I know what you're talking
added
about.
Added graphics and like that's when they had like.
Java, yeah, I remember because I went and saw them in theaters when they re-released them in theaters.
And I was like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, this is stupid.
Yeah, that's
why
when they changed
that
the whole,
alien
like,
wasn't there. Why is that alien there?
That's the whole like the Han shot first started.
Yeah.
That's when they had like Greedo shoot first and they changed it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, so I guess you're talking about like before that.
Yeah, like, it was like. Yeah, I don't remember. I think it was like Target or somebody released them, but I can still remember it was a black box that all of them were in.
Yeah. I do remember that.
And it was just three VHS tapes, man. And it was I fell in love from day one.
Speaking
I was a Return of the Jedi truther back then because
I feel like children
love that movie.
Because that was the first one I saw like in the theater. My uncle took me to see Return of the Jedi and I was 5 years old. And I was like, this is amazing. Like I saw the other ones just like on, you know, VHS or whatever. But I actually went to like a theater to see Return of the Jedi. And so I was
that
like,
came
that's
out, what,
the
83?
83, when... yeah.
Yeah.
And so as a 5 year old child, I'm like, this is the greatest movie ever. And it's the only one I've ever seen, but it's the greatest one ever. But I had all like the Millennium Falcon. I had a Darth Vader carrying case for the action figures. Like I was Star Wars'd out when I was a child. And so like
as you should have been.
A long, like it's been part of my life, essentially my whole life.
Yeah, I don't remember a time when I didn't know Star Wars.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because for you for sure, because it's been part of the zeitgeist your whole life.
Yes, my like, whole life. It's been
for me, like the first one was released like the year I was born. So literally like my whole life, it's been part of pop culture, right? And so, like, speaking of, like, this is the 40th anniversary of, like, Return of the Jedi, since you brought it up. And my thinking is this. So, in the theater, whenever they're playing it, they're showing the last scene, you know, whenever the Obi-Wan and the Force ghosts of, like, Obi-Wan and Anakin.
So, are you about to ask me if I prefer
yes,
the OG one with old Anakin or
yes,
the,
that's what
the
I'm about
new
thinking.
Version with...
Yeah, man, which one would you prefer?
I'd say...
Because I'm kind of... I kind of don't care. That's my stance is, like, I'm fine. If you want to put... the prequel Anakin in
I'm
there,
just
I'm
going
fine
too
with
far
it.
Into my own headcanon about, like, how it should work. Like, I get... It doesn't become a preference for me. It becomes more like what fits with what the Force would do, which is stupid.
Well, yeah, well, it should be the old Anakin then because he died as an older man. So you wouldn't have his Force Ghost be his younger self.
Unless,
in theory.
God, we're about
otherwise,
to be,
you would
okay,
see.
I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it.
You and McGregor.
Full nerd on this. Okay. This is a sports podcast. But here's the other part of it. Like, maybe it's. So you have to be a light side user to become a fourth ghost. You can't, dark side users can't become force ghosts, by the way.
Okay. So I get what you're saying. I know where you're going with this.
So it might be like, it might be that he's manifesting as who he was as a light side user.
But he had, had he switched back to the light prior to his death when he saved Luke and presumably killed the Emperor.
Well, it's possible that like he could have a whatever his preference is. Like if he doesn't want to be represented as the person that was inside the Vader suit. So he's being represented as like who he was before.
I'm glad everyone tuned into like Star Wars nerd talk.
Yeah.
We're talking about like his preference as a Force ghost after his death. All right. Joe, why don't you hit us with the Am I the Asshole for this
one? Our weekly off-season Am I the Asshole. So I picked this. This one's not as juicy as last week's super crazy one that we had. But I picked this one because I thought it brought up a couple of interesting questions. All right, so this week's Am I the Asshole. It is Am I the Asshole for expecting my sister to pay for her own drinks at my bachelorette and at my wedding? All right, so. Basically, we got a sister who wants her sister to pay for her own drinks at events. Okay, here we go. Hi, I'm 28-year-old female. Am getting married in August. This person, I don't believe, has English as a first language, and this I get a vibe that this isn't in the United States.
Yeah, some of the verbiage he's used is like this is either I was thinking like this is a British person or
it's, I was thinking Eastern Europe when I read it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I will do my best to kind of just, I won't be reading it word for word. I'm going to kind of like, I'm going to correct their grammar. If you happen to find this one and think, why did he change it?
We're going to Americanize it a little bit.
Yeah. So me and my partner came into a substantial amount of money from a horrible event that happened to us before I or met that happened to him before I met him. So we ended up using that money to pay for our wedding after we paid off all of my debts and, bought essentials for the house and kids. So from the beginning of the story, it sounds like her fiance, the person that she's marrying, was in some kind of accident or had something bad happen to him. I don't know. Maybe somebody died and he got an inheritance. But he comes into a lot of money. He now meets his now fiance. They pay off her debts. Sounds like they have already had children because she mentions that they bought essentials for their house and kids. I don't know. Maybe that's for future children. I don't know. Children aren't mentioned again in this, but anyway, they've come into an amount of money that doesn't seem to be like super millionaire, but makes them well off. My two sisters, 27-year-old we will call Sarah and a 25-year-old we will call Anne, are really close to each other, but not so much to me. They didn't know about the money until recently because I got bombarded with questions on how I was affording all of this. I'm assuming the house and the wedding. So I eventually gave in and explained to them. But now Sarah keeps asking to lend money off of me, or if I can buy her things as she doesn't have as much money as I do and wants to buy her kids things like I do with mine. Okay, actually, no, the kids are back now, so it sounds like she already has kids. But I keep telling her no. She keeps saying that I'm being selfish and that she deserves at least some of it because, quote, at the end of the day, she's my sister. So when I've put my foot down and cut her off from contacting me, she went after my partner, so I uninvited her to the wedding. If she can't respect me or my partner, then I don't want her there. As a response to this, Anne stated that I should at least pay Sarah's debts off before paying for the wedding, as Sarah is struggling quite a lot but does not work. During all of this, I sent out all of the invitations that said on it, the bar is only cash, so everyone will need to withdraw money beforehand, as the closest ATM is quite far from the venue. Everyone has sent their RSVPs with no issues until I read Anne's. Her said, I will be coming, but you will need about $300 for my drinks. I rang her straight away, asking her what she meant, and her response was, if you want me there, I am not paying for my drinks. It is your choice to get married, so you can pay for my drinks and meal. It isn't like you can't afford it anyway. She also added that I need to pay for her drinks and meal at my bachelorette. I politely explained to her that it is my money. I've paid for her bridesmaid dress and for her to get her nails done, her hair done, and that she should be willing to attend just because I'm her sister and I should not be expected to pay for her drinks as tap water is free. And I am refusing to pay for it. Okay. She went to Sarah and my mom to complain about it. And now I'm being called an asshole for wanting my sister to, or not wanting my sister to be there for free, knowing I have all this money. All right, Matt. So here's the situation. We got somebody that's got, she's got a little bit of cash. Sounds like the rest of her family does not have a little bit of cash. And there's now an argument over whether or not she should be paying to cover her family's bar bill at her wedding. What do you think she's being an asshole here, Matt?
First of all, if you have a cash bar at a wedding, I think you're an asshole. Bar.
Okay.
However, it's not your obligation to pay for other ones. Some other person's like debts or bills or whatever the case may be. You know, not like obligation. Like, it's one thing like, hey, I'm going through a hard time. Can you help me? And then you can make that decision on your own, one way or another. I don't think you're being an asshole either way, if you say yes or no. The sister's kind of being an asshole for like expecting this type of monetary gifting that I would consider to be above and beyond what would be normally be expected.
Yeah, I don't think she's an asshole. I've been to one wedding, I think, in my life that had a cash bar, and I knew the groom really. I wasn't in the wedding party, but I knew him really well. And
I've never been to one that had a cash bar.
They didn't have the
money. Which is fine. I know what happens. Yeah. I'm just saying, I've never been there.
If you're going to have a big, man, alcohol gets expensive, man. If you have a big wedding. I get it. This was a big wedding, too.
So when I planned our wedding, like, that's part of the planning is like, I told my wife, like, it's going to be a lot of like alcohol. That's just part of it.
Gotcha.
We're inviting
the one I've been to that had a cash bar. The groom had like tickets for him and like his wedding party so that they didn't have to pay cash. It was like, and so like I got some tickets from him. So I still ended up not having to, but here's what I think about it. I don't think you're an asshole. If you have a cash bar, sometimes it's just what you got to do. Sounds like this person probably could afford to not do it, but hey, like, it is pretty frivolous to waste a significant amount of money to pay for a bunch of people to drink. So I don't have an issue with that. I don't think she's an asshole for this. You don't have to drink at a wedding. If you can't afford to drink, then just don't drink if it's a cash bar. Like, there have been plenty of times in my life where, like, I did not have a lot of money when I was younger. And I went with my friends to do things, and I couldn't afford to do all of the things that were available to do. That's just life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you should be expected to pay for people's drinks just because you can. No. This person's not an asshole. But I was going to ask you, it led into the question, Matt, of like, I was curious, like, so you guys did have an open bar at your wedding?
Well, it was free alcohol. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Yes.
You got to explain that better.
Well, it was a very small affair. It wasn't like a big wedding. So we had several kegs of beer.
Okay.
That was available, and other liquor that anyone could partake in.
Gotcha. So, all right. So yours was, it was kind of more of a party.
It's kind of more of a party.
Didn't you and your wife, like, in your tux and her wedding dress, end up at Trojan in Waco that night?
So, yeah, at the time, okay. I think it's called something different now. But at the time, there was it was called something different then. It's Trojan now. It was used to be called Bogart's back in 2006.
Gotcha.
And so we got married at a friend's house. They had, like, a beautiful backyard with the gazebo and all that. Had the Justice of Peace come out. We had a cool, like, laid back small wedding with our like closest friends, and then had and her at the house, her our friend's house, had our like reception. We had like the kegs, you know, there's like I said, the aforementioned kegs of beer and other liquors of sorts. And Then we went to, it was in Waco. And then we went to the Waco Hilton. We had a honeymoon suite and all that stuff. And we kind of passed out. And we told everyone, hey, we're going to go across the street. We're going to take a nap. And then we'll have an after party at Bogart's. So we went over there. And we got back at I wore a tux. My wife got back in her dress. We went across the street. And we were just doing Jager bombs and just being crazy. You know, this is and then Aaron Bruce showed up, who was formerly Baylor basketball. He was there.
And Australian point guard Aaron Bruce.
We were doing shots with Aaron Bruce.
He drove a Ford Explorer. And I remember him driving around campus.
And then my current friend, Scott Spainsmith, I didn't know at the time, he was at the bar at the time.
He's the one who told me this story.
So he was there and partaking in all of our revelry. And then later on, 5-10 years later, we became really good friends here because we both lived in Waco and we met through other friends. So it was a interesting little story.
But yeah. See, my wedding, I had a big wedding and we did have an open bar. I did not pay for it.
If I had a big wedding, I would have had an open bar. And that's just
my wedding was a me. Wedding was a shit show. It was a blast, dude. It was people consumed. So we had 3 different beers. I think we had Shiner, Dos Equis, and Coors, I think were the beers that we had. And then we had bourbon, vodka, and gin to make with mixed drinks. And then we had margarita machines. With tequila, awesome. Of course.
Awesome.
So yeah, ours was my father-in-law paid for that. We had wine as well.
As a person with 2 daughters, also, it's I understand what
I got. I got very lucky in that my sister has 2 older brothers, and so my in-laws had already participated in 2 weddings without having to, because both of the women that my brothers-in-law married, their parents also paid for their weddings. So my in-laws were we 2 of our kids, we didn't have to really pay for anything. And this is our only daughter, so we'll pay for everything. And we were oh, okay. Hell yeah.
Yeah. I'm already getting hit up with my daughter, my 14-year-old.
Dude, it's expensive. Today, it's
she's expensive. I'm in a quinceanera in October. I was what? And she's yeah, my friend at school. So I have to have a dress and I have to know this dance and I have to do all this stuff for this quinceanera. And I was awesome. So we have to go buy a dress.
Yeah. weddings are crazy expensive. So I just can't imagine.
Here's my advice for everyone out there, young lovers. Just elope. Take that money and just go to do something else.
See, it's not like we had that. I couldn't have gone to my father-in-law and been hey, give me the cash instead. It was no, this is money I will spend on a wedding.
I will say this. How old were you when you got married? Are you and your wife?
How old I am now. I've been married for, it'll be 4 years this year. So I was 31.
So I was 27. And my wife was 29. And so we're pretty independent. So it wasn't like we paid for our own wedding. It wasn't we didn't have her parents didn't pay for it. So we're because we were both adults and.
Oh yeah. I mean, we were too.
We're almost 30.
Her parents paid for it.
And that's cool. Absolutely. I wish we would have had that. But so we were in retrospect, I was man, we should have just taken that money that we saved and gone to Vegas.
So my father-in-law was really smart. And he and I have talked about this before, and he's he laughs about the fact that he's yeah, that is exactly why I did what I did. So we asked them give us a budget, what is our budget so that we could stay within it, you know, because we were we don't want to we don't want to be rude and say
we
want this venue and that's
we need $50,000.
Right. So we were what's the budget? And her dad just told us, he goes, you know what? He's you don't have a budget. I trust that you guys will keep things within reason. And so when we were planning the wedding, every time we talked about anything, it was well, how much does it, can we, and we were really trying to be as conservative as we could. to like not go overboard. And I told her dad, I was like, did you do that because like you knew if you gave us a budget, we would spend it all? And he was like, that's exactly why I did that. He's like, I knew if I said, you know,
if you said 50,000, you're going to spend 50,000.
Exactly. And he's like, it's a gamble, but I felt like you guys would keep things within reason. So you didn't have like a number to chase.
It's a good idea. I might use that actually.
Yeah, as long as you trust them to be respectful, because that it can blow up on you.
No, yes. That,
but also, he could have said no at any point to anything. It's like, yeah, we want to get married at,
you know, how much
we
is want it?
To rent no. out the Toyota Center. You know, he'd be like, no, different. I'm not doing that.
We're going to get married at, what's Joel Osteen's church?
Oh, Lakewood.
Lakewood. We're going to get married at Lakewood. That's $25,000.
We're renting out NRG
Stadium. Straight to Joel Osteen.
Yeah.
Make that check out to Joel Osteen Industries.
So yeah, okay. Person's not the asshole.
I don't think person's
the asshole. If you're getting married, try to pay for people's alcohol.
I would also say, like, if it's your sibling and you know they're struggling, my inclination is try to help them out too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, granted, they shouldn't expect you to.
So,
because it's not your money, even though you're like, you know, siblings, but I mean, be, you know, a decent person.
That leads me into the second question that I had out of this, because the other key part of this story, Matt, is this person has come into money, right, due to some circumstance, unexpected money. Okay. So my question for you is, say you win the Powerball. Okay. Right, tomorrow. I don't know if it's going tomorrow. I don't know what the jackpot is right now. But see, like, it's one of the big ones. So after taxes, in your bank account, what you have to spend with however you want, you have $250 million in your bank account right now.
Okay.
Do you already have a list of folks that you're like, they are getting some money from me, or like, I know I'm going to pay off their house or pay off whatever debts they have? Do you have that list of people?
Well, it's a list of like one. Like, to me, it's like, well, like my mom, like, she will, who is retired, but I was like, well, she will be able to do whatever she wants for her retirement.
It's just your mom? Like, you don't have like, you haven't thought like, okay, like, this is like the circle things. Of friends that get stuff.
Well, my thing is like this, if someone needs something at that point, I'm going to.
See, I have like a list something. In my head where I'm like, okay, I'm paying off those people's house.
Like, my thing is like this, is like, okay, so like my mom, definitely. Then it's like, I'm going to, and this is maybe it's, I'm a psychopath, but then it's like, I'm going to give Baylor like X amount of money because I'm going to get my name on a building.
I've thought about
like,
that too.
And then it's like
how much do I have to give them to get McLean's name off McLean's
table? Yeah, it's like, and then it's like my high school, like I'm going to rename some shit.
Oh, because, I don't give a shit about my high school.
Well, I do, just because I got people I went to high school with. Like, I went to a small town. Their kids go there. It's like, I'm going to put my name on buildings and shit.
Yeah, I went to.
It's more vindictive than, like, altruistic. But, no, like, I used to be like, well, my sister might give this much. My niece and nephew might give this much. But then, like, I thought about it. I was like, well, they own their own business. You know, they're kind of. They're good. But
if you had $250 million in the bank, my kids, and I asked you for $1 million, would you give it to me?
Did you need $1 million?
Like, if you had 250 bucks cash right now, million, I asked you for a dollar, would you give it to me?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah. If you asked me, I would be like, for sure.
Yeah, here's there we million. Go. I'd give you $1 million. I'd do it.
Here's $1 million. It's not hurting my bottom line.
Don't ask me for a thing ever again.
But then I also think about, like, when there's some people in my family, like, you're kind of an asshole. I don't think I'm going to give you money. I'm sorry. You kind of were, like, mean to me. So, fuck off.
That's all me. Right. I guess we should
talk asshole. About sports. I am the asshole, so.
Yeah, you are. You are. Just a little bit. But I guess we should talk a little sports. Didn't you have some sports on the thing?
Yes. Today? So, there has been some news as far as, like, in the college football world, which is where we kind of operate. So I thought I'd start with there. So the the college football playoff came out and they kind of set the dates for the 2024 and the 2025 college football playoff, which will be the first 12-team playoff. And so basically it breaks down like this. So in 2024, the first round games are going to be on campus. And so the dates are Friday, December 20th, you're going to have one game. Saturday, December 21st, you're going to have three games. Then the quarterfinals will start Tuesday, December 31st. It'll be at the Fiesta Bowl. Wednesday, January 1st, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. And then the Rose Bowl and the All-State Sugar Bowl. So you'll have three more games for the quarterfinals. And then the semifinals will be 2 days. You'll have the Orange Bowl on January 9th, the Cotton Bowl on January 10th. And then finally, you have the national championship on January 20th at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And that's 2024 schedule. And then for 2025, it's kind of the same thing. You know, of course, the date shifts a little bit. So December 19th, Friday, December 19th, you have one game. Then that Saturday, you're going to have three games on home, home site state stadiums.
I have to stop you, though, because where did you say that the national championship was going to be played?
In 2024, it's Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
You want to look that up again?
And I'm reading it off really like it.
Oh, so you mean it's in 2025, but it's the 2024.
So it's the 2024 championship. It's going to be January 20th, 2025.
Got it. Okay. Because you were wrong. I thought you meant like in 2024.
No. It's the 2024 season. But once it clicks over to January, it's 2025. That's correct. But during the 2025 season, when we get down to it, the quarterfinals kind of shift, and you have like on New Year's Eve, it's at the Cotton Bowl. And then on New Year's Day, they're going to have Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl again for the quarterfinals. The semifinals are going to be at the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl on January 8th and 9th of 2026. And then the national championship is at Hard Rock Stadium on January 19th of 2026.
In Miami.
Yep. So, and there's been a lot of like talk about how, especially in 2024, I don't know if exactly in 2025, they're kind of going like head to head with NFL. Cause I think they start doing like Saturday games or ramping up to like playoffs or maybe even playoff games during the same time frame. And historically, college football has avoided going head to head with NFL.
I think they'll be fine. They'll find a way to make it work.
Yeah, because I think generally the people I talk to fall into like a couple different camps. You either have like a diehard college football fans who like they don't really care about NFL. You know, they're college football fans. Or you have just football fans who like they watch all football. And so
I watch all football, but I would watch a college football playoff game over an NFL playoff game that did not involve the Texans.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Like, I'll watch a college football game over, like, a generic college football game I will watch over a generic NFL game.
For sure. For sure. I've watched Mountain West games on a Tuesday night, and I didn't watch a single Thursday night football NFL game that didn't involve my team.
See, I watched a lot of them. Like, if they're on, I'll watch them. That's kind of my thing. I enjoy the sport of football.
Yeah, I kind of just default to like if on Thursday if it's like a college football game.
I just like the vibes of college football better.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I don't think it's Thursday better football.
If you have Thursday night NFL football on Amazon, and then you have Thursday night college football, whatever it is, whether it's Mac or Sunbelt or whoever on ESPN, I'm probably just gonna watch the college game because I like college football better.
Yeah, I like it better too.
So yeah, so I will. I'm the same way. Like, I like all football. I would default to college football.
Yeah, for sure. So I think there's people that'll be the exact opposite of us, which I get. But I think I honestly think they'll figure out a way to make it work. I don't think they're worried too much about any competing with the NFL.
No, I mean, anything, I guess that's a TV ratings thing. Make meaningful
football games during that time period. It's going to be great for Vegas, man. That's like, it's going to be really good for casinos.
Well, for sure. For sports betting, absolutely. Because you're going to have multiple games going on simultaneously that you can bet money on.
Yeah. There's going to be people that care more. Like, it's the casinos are going to make a lot of money off of people.
Yeah. And for what I'm taking away from it is, like, I guess it's a TV ratings thing as far as, like, going against NFL. You don't want to split your audience. One, because most, you know, if you look at a Venn diagram of, like, NFL fans, you're going to overlap with college football fans and vice versa. So, yeah, you don't want to isolate your audience.
I don't think
alienate them.
They won't play at the same time. But I'm not worried about it at all. I think the quarterfinals are
Wednesday and Thursday.
No, I think they won't play on any Sundays. And I think any time that the NFL has occasional Saturday playoff games, but only, I think, in the divisional round. I only think it's 1 week. So I think what they'll do is, like, the college football game will be scheduled at a different time than the divisional game that's played in the NFL that day. So, like, if the divisional game's at 3, then the college football game will start at 7.
Yeah, the NFL's, like, slowly encroaching on college football, like, historical dates. Like this year, there's a Black Friday game, which has normally been, like, isolated to college football. Mm-hmm. Like, NFL has, like, the Thursday Thanksgiving games. Then they don't have games till the weekend. This year, they're going to have a Black Friday game, which normally is Ole Miss, Mississippi State game, or something like that nature. You know, you have, like, an Egg Bowl.
Yeah, it's normally a rivalry game.
Or a rivalry game of some sort. It used to be, when I was growing up, it was like Texas and Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll go back to that, you know, next year. But now NFL's kind of saying, well, we're going to have a game on this. We're going to kind of take over your space.
I miss watching Texas A&M. That was always fun to watch every year.
You know, and that's one of the things. Of all the, like, the what we spew about, like, the Texas, like, rivalry and hatred and all that stuff, I do miss that game because it was something that I'm nostalgic because, like you said, like, growing up, we did that on Thanksgiving, watched that game, that Thanksgiving weekend.
Every year.
That was part of it. We watched the Texas A&M game.
And in my house, we hated both of them. Like,
yes.
It was a hate watch, but yeah, we always watched it. I miss Baylor playing A&M, man. Like, I miss playing them. I do.
Because now it's like, it's been so far removed. Like, I'm almost apathetic about Texas A&M. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I really don't hate them.
It's been 11 years.
I don't, you know, like, so what? Like, I'm not good. I know some, like, older Baylor fans, like, they still hold on to this, like, hate for like Texas A&M. And I just don't have that type of, like, vitriolic, like, hatred for College Station or Texas A&M anymore. It's gone away after 11 years or however long.
I don't like them, but yeah, I know I hate Texas and TCU way worse.
And it's weird also for me because, like, I have two, like, family members who are, like, go to Texas A&M. So that's another thing. Let me ask you your opinion on this, because I've kind of debated this. How do you broach that subject if you have, like, family, close family, who go to a rival school?
What do you mean?
So, like, let's say, like, I'm a Baylor fan. I'm a Baylor alum. I went to Baylor. My niece goes to Texas A&M. So do you think, like, do you root against them still, like, your hatred? Or do you kind of be like, well, I have kind of a connection to the school, so I'm not going to be as...
Oh, no, I still root against hatred. Them. And I give my niece crap. That's what I would do.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. Unless it's my child.
What if you're, like, yeah, that's my next question. Like, if your son went to A&M.
I would want him to be happy, but I would still.
Would you wear, like, A&M, like, gear to like, go to games with him?
No, I don't think so.
Would we catch you, like, in, like, a maroon, like, Columbia, like, Fisherman
only
shirt?
Only if he played for them. Like, if my son is on the team, that's a different story. But no, like, if he's just, like. He's like, yeah, I want to go to A&M because.
What if A&M offered you a job, and they hired you?
Yeah, then I would. Yeah, for sure.
Then it's like, yeah, you pay me, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're all on board.
Yeah, if I got hired, like, 12th Man Foundation hired me or something, and be like, yeah, sure, I'll wear Aggie stuff.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. If you pay me, if you're paying, help me, like, care for my family, absolutely. Like, I'm 100% on board.
Yeah. So you also told me there was some men's basketball news this week.
Yes. So highly touted. Now I'm going to butcher his name. I think I'm just going to say his last name because I don't know how to pronounce his first name. It's a, I guess, center is how we would characterize him. He was in the 2024 class. His last name is Missy.
Missy.
Is it how I said Eve's or yeah. Eve?
Eve.
Okay. So Eve Missy, he 2024 class, 5-star recruit. He reclassified for the 2023 class and signed with Baylor this week. So he'll be part of the incoming freshman class with Baylor. And he's someone who is, he was greatly needed this past year. Someone of his skill set and position need in the middle of the defense there. And I'm super excited about this development with Baylor basketball. He's like 6'11".
Yeah, the other thing is I think he might be, he probably, like, even though he's extremely highly rated, he's so young that he may still just be a little raw. But he'll get playing time.
But he's like 6'11", 230. He's was, like I said, a 5-star. I think he was under one website had him like the number 15 in the class of 2024. I've seen him in number 24. So, I mean, but he's in the top 25 of like prospects coming out in the 2024 class, reclassified. So he'll be with all the you know, Mirolito and all the guys that are coming in, Jacoby, all those guys coming in for the 2023 class. So it's pretty exciting development for Baylor basketball, considering not only like how the season ended, but kind of the attrition you've seen on that program.
Matt, I see, the thing that I love the most is like most of these guys that are coming in are not one, like, I don't know if any of them are one and done guys. Maybe Jacoby Walter would be.
Yeah, these, I don't think Miro Little is.
Yeah, Miro's not, and Eve won't be either.
I mean, he might be. He looked great in what I've seen, like some of the stuff he's played. Like, I don't know the level of competition.
I still think, from what I've read about him, I think he's a little too, I think he's going to be a 2 or 3 year college player. And I think that's why he reclassified, because he knew he needed to like get that hardcore experience.
He's got great size right now, though.
Yeah.
I mean, to be 230 as an incoming freshman is amazing. And is big.
But I don't, that's just my opinion. I don't think these guys will be. And then we've got another stacked class the year after.
Yeah.
And I think Langston Love will be here for 4 years. So I'm not, sure. I'm excited about this coming year. I think the true, like, super team that we might be building towards is the year after next. That's the year I'm looking for. Like,
yeah,
I feel like I'm not going to be disappointed next year if we're not like winning.
And I think
the
they'll
conference.
Be really good next year. I think
they'll be
all
good.
These freshmen. I mean, if you have like Jacoby Walter, I mean, Miro Little, I think is going to probably come off the bench. I mean, Jacoby Walter, I could see starting as a freshman. I think Miro Little, like I said, I could probably see coming off the bench. Missy, I could see him starting or, you know, getting good rotation with Chama Chachua in the middle of the defense. And then, of course, you talked about Langston Love. We'll see what happens with Adam. But I think we have a good – and then if the people who have gone into the NBA draft that are leaving their options open to return to school, if they come back, they don't get what they want as far as, like, their evaluations, you could have a pretty loaded, like, team – going into the this upcoming season.
You can, but I still think year after, that's
yeah,
like,
no,
that's
you're absolutely right. You're about. Absolutely, I agree. I think year after is really when you're going to be like, okay, this is like a national championship caliber team.
Correct, yeah.
Now, I think next year is going to be a very good team. Kind of like we have been the past couple of years where you're like, oh yeah, this is going to be one of the best teams in the Big 12. This is going to be probably one of the best teams in the country. And then, but maybe not be quite like that national championship caliber yet. But like you said, that next year will be like when they get over that hump.
Right.
I think as well.
All right, Matt, the next thing on the show notes was May the 4th, but we did talk about that at the top. Is there anything on
I did Star want to Wars. Touch it. Well, I want to touch on a couple of Big 12 things before we move on to Star Wars.
Why?
So there's been a couple of news pieces about the Big 12.
Did Brett Yormark partner with Star Wars?
I wish. They'd be like, my world's colliding. No, but the Big 12 is reportedly nearing a deal to play football, basketball games in Mexico. That's part of like their expanding, the brand, the Big 12 brand outside of the United States and kind of building that. And the reports we're seeing is like the agreements aren't complete, but they would be multiple year contracts. And it's not going to be like a one-off experience. It's going to be like, we're going to set up a Big 12 kind of like footprint in Mexico. Football games would be played in like Monterrey and men's basketball games in Mexico City with the potential for more sports in the future. And like it says that like specific dates and teams involved have not yet been determined, although Kansas and Houston are potential teams for the Mexico City basketball game, according to multiple reports. So that's one thing that the Big 12 is trying to expand. And we've kind of heard rumblings of this about how Brett Yormark, the Big 12, they wanted to kind of like put a footprint in Mexico.
The only thing that worries me is about that is if you remember the man who single-handedly dismantled and ruined Texas athletics and left them into this smoldering mess that they are now that they're trying to clean up was Steve Patterson. And that was back when he was their athletic director. And his big thing was he wanted to make Texas a global brand. And it's difficult to do that because the rest of the world thinks college athletics is stupid and dumb and they don't understand why it exists. So college sports is a uniquely American thing. There's in fact a great video on YouTube of Steve, like from a show Stephen Fry did, where he goes to the Iron Bowl one year. And it's really funny watching a British person experience college football. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll work. Like Kansas and Houston would make sense for me in Mexico City, just because Kansas is such a big brand.
It's a big brand.
And then
yeah, I'm sure you'd rotate through schools, of course.
Yeah.
For those Mexico City basketball games, and same thing for football. Like there's been no like mention, but like the football games in Monterrey, you would probably just rotate through Big 12 teams to go.
And this is something that everybody's doing. They're trying to, like, sports leagues are trying to expand into Mexico. The NFL plays there now. Baseball played their first series there this year.
Well, it makes
sense. The Astros are going to play there next year.
There's a lot of people. You have a market there and that's untapped. And we have Big 12 has proximity to Mexico.
Yeah.
With multiple teams in Texas. So
as long as it's not like us trying to be like, have like Big 12 Taiwan, or something like where it's just like, it doesn't, we don't need Big 12 Croatia.
Now basketball, that makes more sense because Chinese, they're huge basketball fans.
That's true. Well,
would make more sense.
And it would tap the recruiting market in Europe if you went over there, I guess.
Yeah. But another thing they're doing is this has also been reported, like they're kind of trying to revamp their television experience. So they're having these big meetings out west. I think it's like in Arizona somewhere, where you have all the administrators, presidents, they're having these big meetings. And so something that's come out of that is that the Big 12 is kind of talking to its media partners about how they're going to do their broadcasts. And one thing they're saying is like, they're going to have like, almost like an XFL, maybe USFL kind of experience where you're going to have, coaches mic'd up, players mic'd up, in-game interviews with coaches, all access to locker rooms and things of that nature to kind of make it a different experience, even like refs mic'd up during booth reviews and things of that nature to have a different experience than what you get with your more like cookie cutter college football broadcast.
See, I don't want it to go too far. I'm cool with the refs being mic'd up. I think that's really neat. I'm not big on like all access locker rooms or like coaches being interviewed in the middle of games. I hate that. Though I'd be cool if it was like, one player a game is mic'd up like they do in the NFL. Like generally like one guy's mic'd up that they can that they can use that footage for later. Like I would think that would be cool just to be like,
I'd be okay if it was like depends on the coach.
So like, I don't think coaches should be mic'd up unless it's like that situation. Where, well, but like,
I mean, like,
I don't want a coach to be interviewed in the middle of the game. I hate that.
I think Aranda could probably be interviewed in the middle of the game and it wouldn't cause any effect.
I know. I hate it. I hate it because they don't want to do it. I don't think Aranda's going to want to do it either. Like, they do it in baseball now where they'll like interview the manager in the middle of the game. And I'm like, let him go do his job. I don't know. I don't like that.
I kind of like the when I say all access, I wouldn't mind it if you're like, okay, we're going to have like someone in the locker room after the game.
Like, I don't think Saban would say yes to that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think the best coaches would want that.
After a loss, he'd probably say, no, we're not going to have you in the game.
Like, but I honestly think it's a negative thing for, if you're going to have a coach that's mic'd up all the time and he has like media commitments middle game like that, I think that's going to be a deterrent for like top coaches.
But you could do it. You could work it away. Like, okay, we're going to have all access. So I mean, like the week of the game, we're going to have cameras and practice and meetings.
See, I think that too is a deterrent. Like, I think if the moment you start doing that, if the Big Ten and the SEC and the ACC and Pac-12 don't do that, then like if I'm a coach and it's equal money, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go to the thing that I don't have cameras in my face all the time while I do my job.
Yeah, but also like the Big 12 is not the SEC or the Big Ten. You have to make yourself.
But you're competing against a lot of other. I think you could hurt yourself doing this. I do. I think you could.
But you also have to set yourself apart in some way.
Yeah, but not by that. There's so many other ways to set yourself apart.
Well, I think
coaching is such a big part of college football. Don't do things that might piss off your coaches.
Brett Yormark is going to. I mean, he's won a lot. I mean, he's trying a bunch of different things to think outside the box, do things to. Set yourself apart.
Matt, right? Do you know the easiest way to set yourself apart? Win.
Star Wars?
No, just win.
Oh.
That's it.
Well, like, I know, but I'm saying like...
You think people gave a shit about Clemson 15 years ago? No. Then what'd they do? They won. Yeah, 15 and now years ago, now
that's
a
completely different landscape with the transfer portal NIL. Like, we're in a different world now than 15 years ago. You can't even – that's a ridiculous, like, comparison.
No, it's not. It's about winning. Who cares how you do it? But that's what's most important. If you win a bunch of college sports, people care about you.
It's different now. It's harder to win.
Did you care about Alabama when you were – did you care about Alabama when you were younger?
No.
Okay, why? Because they sucked when we were younger. Like, and now Alabama's a big deal. Like, Nebraska. Do you think kids today care about Nebraska? No, but kids in the 90s did. Why? Because Nebraska won. If the Big 12 wants to be a big dog, go win some national titles.
The landscape has changed, though, with, like, the transfer portal wasn't a thing.
That has nothing to do with winning, causing a team to be popular. I don't care about the
methods. Yeah, but the thing about it is, like, the transfer portal and NIL – winning teams are going to, you know, exploit that to become, yeah,
so you
stay
have
winning
to become
teams.
One of them.
Yeah. But you have to get kids to come to your school and you have to put your name out there and you have to do things differently. You have to think outside the box, especially if you're not SEC in the Big Ten. You have to make your, you have to be in the news and be popular and be.
Cool. I'm telling you right now, this is a negative move. If they mic coaches up and force them to do interviews mid game and have all access locker rooms, it is going to be a net negative for the Big 12.
I disagree. Guarantee you. Because
guarantee you.
Watching XFL games, it makes the television experience.
Do you think
better.
Of the XFL as a legitimate football league?
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yeah, because the NFL steals the good ideas from them. So the thing about it is we're going to be on the cutting edge of what our sport. We're going to have new ideas,
so,
fresh
awesome.
Ideas.
We're going to be like a league that has failed three times.
You just got to be better than the ACC and the Pac-12, basically. You're never going to compete with the SEC and the Big Ten. That's just not feasible.
No, but winning will get you there. Like, winning is what matters. That's it. That's the only thing that matters. That's how you get t-shirt fans, and t-shirt fans are what drive things. Gotta win.
I agree you have to win. But I also think you have to market yourself in a certain way that where your people are talking about you. So when kids are trying to pick their school, you know, they think about the Big 12 schools because of the type of conference it is. We're different than the other guys.
All the guys in college football right now want to go play in the XFL because of the way they have their coaches mic'd up.
Well, they want to play in XFL because they get paid and they didn't get in the NFL.
Wait, they still want to go to the NFL more? But the NFL doesn't have mic'd up coaches.
Yet. They don't have mic'd up coaches yet. So, they will soon enough.
All right. Speaking of coaches, we've already talked Star Wars. There's another coach in our life, though.
I had something else.
Again, what else do you have? You've talked about everything.
I have something else for Star Wars.
Oh, you have something else for Star Wars?
Yeah, something I wanted to pose a question to you.
Okay, pose away.
So, IGN came out today, and they listed their Star Wars movies. Just movies. No television shows. So, just like they're listed.
Okay, so is this 11, 9 movies, or 11. Is it 11 movies?
11 movies.
Okay, so we're including Rogue One and Solo.
Yes. So, their list goes like this. Empire, New Hope, Return of the Jedi, The Last Jedi, Rogue One, Force Awakens, Revenge of the Sith, Solo, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Rise of Skywalker. And so the question I wanted to pose to you, how would your list change from theirs? Like, I know how mine, I mean, I think this is a pretty good list, but I would have some couple tweaks.
Mine's Empire 1.
Absolutely.
I would probably say Rogue One too.
Okay.
I love that movie. A New Hope 3. Return of the Jedi 4. Because I like the original trilogy the best. Now's where it gets hard. Probably Revenge of the Sith. No, it's a garbage movie. Don't fall into the trap. All three of the prequels are garbage.
See, here's the problem.
I would say, hold on. I'll say Force Awakens 5th, because it's just A New Hope. It's fine. Probably then Revenge of the Sith at 6. And then... what would I put at 7? Would it be one of the new ones, or would it be one of the Matt, what am I going to do here? Probably Solo. I'll put Solo at 7. And then 8, I'm going to do Phantom Menace. 9, I'm going to do Rise of Skywalker. 10, I'm going to do The Last Jedi. And 11, I'm going to do Attack of the Clones.
Okay. So we have wildly different. So like I think their list is pretty good. I would make some tweaks. I would go Empire, A New Hope, Return of the Jedi, Rogue One, The Last Jedi, Force Awakens, Revenge of the Sith, Solo. Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Rise of Skywalker.
How can you think Rise of Skywalker is worse than Attack of the... Have you seen Attack of the Clones?
Rise of Skywalker is absolutely
Attack of the
worse.
Clones is one of the worst movies.
Somehow,
not one of the worst
lives.
Star Wars. It's one of the worst movies.
Somehow, Palpatine lives. That's it. That's a ridiculous movie.
I don't like sand.
I get it. It's still better than, like, we're talking about.
So here's the difference.
The big,
here's
the threat.
The sequel trilogy. Here's the difference. The sequel trilogy is deeply and foundationally flawed by no fault of its own because of the way Disney managed the production of those movies. Who made them? Who wrote them? J.J. Abrams screwed it up from the beginning by not committing. Hold on. So they're fundamentally flawed by no fault of their own. But in a vacuum, each one of them, just by sheer like production value, acting, and story, is better than the prequels. Like, and Attack of the Clones especially.
Like, there's no way that you really think that Rise of the Skywalker is better than Attack of the Clones.
Well, oh, yeah. I think Rise of Skywalker is better than The Last Jedi.
There's nothing redeemable about the Rise of Skywalker.
It has really cool lightsaber fights.
At least Attack of the Clones has some, like, you know, memorable, like, gifts we can make out of it.
You think Rise of Skywalker is worse than The Last Jedi?
I think The Last Jedi is, like, top five.
Oh, God.
Best movies.
Bad movie.
The Last Jedi is one of the best movies.
You like Mary Poppins Leia?
Listen, I'm not gonna.
Yeah,
okay. I'm not gonna participate in your misogyny. So,
yeah, the most natural looking move in any Star Wars is just her Mary Poppins her waying through space. Listen.
Yes, that has flaws. I'm not saying that.
Also, however, Holdo, the admiral that goes down with the ship in that movie, when she's firing her gun at one point, if you look at her, she's going pew pew. She's because the gun doesn't make noise on set. They add that later.
Still better than Revenge of the Sith or Phantom Menace or Solo. I mean, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, we're not talking fine about, to me. Like, I didn't
Solo's fine. Solo's fine.
It's a fine movie.
It's a fine movie.
I don't think it's bad.
There's
some bad Star Wars, man.
I mean,
Attack of the Clones is the worst of them.
Attack of the Clones is bad. Rise of Skywalker is bad. And I think Phantom Menace is bad. I think after you get to that level. They're fine.
Do you think the acting in Rise of Skywalker is worse than the acting in Attack of the Clones?
No, the story is. For sure.
But the acting is so bad in Attack of the Clones.
The acting in Attack of the Clones is bad. The story.
It's like George Lucas had never actually been in a relationship with a woman when he wrote that movie. Like, it's so bad, Matt.
No, I'm there. We had a whole thing last summer. We rewatched these shows. And they're so bad.
So bad. It's the worst. Anyway, you're wrong. I'm right.
I think the thing should be IGN is wrong, but we are individually.
I'm
correct.
Surprised you like Return of the Jedi more than Rogue One.
No, I didn't. Did I say that?
Yeah, you gave the
I
original.
Said Rogue
you
One.
Went, you went 2-1.
No,
three.
I said Empire, New Hope, Return of the Jedi, Rogue One, Last Jedi.
Yes, that's why I'm saying. I said I'm surprised that you think Rogue One isn't better than Return of the Jedi.
I don't. But then, I mean, the thing about it is, like you, like, I have this affinity for the original trilogy.
Yeah, but I
part
do recognize
my own bias.
That Rogue One is a better film than Return of the Jedi. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's hard to make a list when you talk about a film that was made in 1983 versus a film that was made in, like, 2016 or whatever it was. I mean, the film's just going to be, it's going to look better. You have better filmmakers, I think. You know,
I just
think
Cassian
Tony
Andor
Gilroy
is really
a better
cool.
filmmaker. So, I mean, it's going to be a better film. Then I have recency bias. Also, you're going to have recency bias because, like, you know, I took my kids to that, and it was like we all loved it. So I'm going to have an affinity for that film. I'm just nostalgic for the old ones because, like we talked about earlier, Return of the Jedi was like the first movie I went to. So I'm always going to have. Put that a little bit higher on the pedestal than other films that I see.
I can't believe you that you think Rise of Skywalker is worse than
Rise of Skywalker is a horrible film.
It's like we're
forget Star Wars.
Like,
it's
we're
not
comparing
a good
an
film.
Old dirty diaper and like a rotten sack of meat against
right.
each other. But
you're right. But I mean. I think you can have redeemable qualities about Attack of the Clones as bad
no,
as that
can't.
Film is.
No, it's
Rise
so bad.
Of Skywalker is a heaping pile of garbage that is.
I want you to remember the CGI clone troopers. Just want you to remember them.
Hey man, that's just, they did what they could do.
No, it was embarrassing. Jurassic Park had come out like 10 years before.
Listen,
Yeah, don't listen to me.
Listen, they did the best they could do.
No, they really didn't.
Isn't like the like hello there meme, isn't that like Attack of the Clones? That redeems it on its own.
No. Hello there's from Revenge of the Sith because it happens right before Order 66.
Okay.
Because that's right before he kills Grievous.
I mean, if I could do it, I would like tie Attack of the Clones and Rise of Skywalker as the worst. Because you're right. That film is absolutely horrible.
It's just nothing redeemable. It's not a bad Star Wars movie. It's a bad movie.
It's a bad movie. Rise of Skywalker is also a bad movie, though. Not bad Star Wars. It's a bad
movie. I think Rise of Skywalker is a bad... Like, I think if you sat someone down that hadn't seen any other Star Wars movie, and you were like, yeah, this is just the end of one of the... end of one of the trilogies, and they sat down and watched it, they'd be like... Okay, I don't understand half of what's going on. Like, I feel like people only hate that movie because they like Star Wars. But
yeah, now that okay, in real time, I think you've convinced me of this. Because now I'm thinking about it, there are some cool, that lightsaber fight, like on the like wreckage of the Death Star.
Yes,
that's pretty sweet.
It's so stupid that they're at the Death Star, but the fight's cool.
But it looks amazing. With the water and they're fighting the lightsabers, and it's like that's a cool looking like scene. Nothing exists like that in Attack of the Clones.
Correct.
Like, there's nothing in Attack of the Clones. I think, you know what? This movie's stupid, but this looks badass.
It's a Star Wars movie where like,
you just look at Attack of the Clones, you're like, this looks fake. Like, I can't believe I'm watching this.
There's like there's a significant section of Attack of the Clones where Obi-Wan is on Kamino and everything is CGI, and he's so clearly on a blue screen set because
the background,
the white on his face doesn't match the white around.
How, Lucas, you own a whole shop that does special effects.
Obi-Wan goes to a space diner.
Oh yeah. I completely forgot about this.
We live in the Star Wars universe, and the way that they decide to try to assassinate Padme is through a bug.
Thermal
detonators exist, but instead she's like, nah, I'm going to this like creepy crawly centipede thing.
Isn't that when Obi-Wan jumps through a window?
Yes. Yes, he does.
A ridiculous.
He dives down he falls an entire freaking skyscraper's worth of cars. Like, he jumps down through their floating city on Coruscant and survives it.
Seated. Oh, gosh. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous film. Oh my gosh.
I think that's part of it is you suppress the trauma.
You're right. You're right. I wasn't thinking clearly about Attack of the Clones.
Because I was about to be like, I'm going to make you go watch Attack of the Clones.
I don't think I can make it. I think I can make the whole film.
Nah.
Stop it. I'm like, this is dumb.
The scene where they're like rolling through the daisies and the fields on Naboo.
So I saw someone on Twitter today post because of course we know there's a Writers Guild of America strike going on.
Mm-hmm.
So someone's like, what's your favorite line from Star Wars? Because it's, Star Wars Day and all that. And all I thought about was when Obi-Wan says Sith Lords are our specialty. And I hate that line so much because it's based on what, Obi-Wan? Because this is a ridiculous thing.
The Sith were gone.
In retrospect, this is a ridiculous thing to say. Because of one, it's your specialty. Because of one that you didn't defeat because he came back. Oh my gosh. Yeah. The prequels is just a ridiculous set of films.
I will say though, to Obi-Wan's credit, when he does finally, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Rebels, skip ahead. But
true, he learns.
When he does kill Maul, he does it in 2 seconds.
yeah, he completely learns like from his past mistakes. And
it's adjusts. It is one of the most anticlimactic scenes in anything that Star Wars has ever done.
But at the same time, it's such a beautiful scene.
It is. It's a great scene. But also when I watched it the first time and I'm like, oh my God, Maul found Obi-Wan. We're about to get an epic lightsaber battle. And it's literally just like.
Because I love it so much. I really do. Because you see him like he does like Qui-Gon stance, his own stance. And then he kind of like, oh, Maul's going to do the same thing. So I know exactly where he's going to do it. So I can just end it right now. And he does.
Yeah, he's just like
it's a great scene because of the whole like the after effects of the duel.
It's the closure.
Yeah, the closure of like Maul saying everything that he says. So much better than Attack of the Clones. Of anything in Attack of the Clones, kids
cartoons really are better.
Yeah, Dave Filoni is way better. That storytelling.
Matt, are you all caught up on Ted Lasso?
Yes, I watched it yesterday.
I did as well. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What did you think of this latest episode?
I liked it. I mean, it's a good episode. And it was all about like, I liked how they all talked about like relationships. You know, everything's kind of about relationships, right? Ted Lasso with his ex-wife and how he's kind of dealing with whatever's going on with her love life and in relation to his son. You had Keeley going through her, you know, trauma of those videos being released. You have the whole team kind of is a great commentary on like, I guess like revenge porn and things of that nature of like, when you have a video, is it yours? Or once that relationship ends, you need to delete that video because, or picture, whatever the case may be, because that's not yours to disseminate.
Yeah.
That was for a certain part of time that you are no longer part of. So we need to get rid of that.
Also, if you're a person like just a regular everyday person, don't watch those leaks when they come out. Like,
yeah,
don't go look at that stuff.
For sure. And then you also had like the whole like Colin and then kind of his kind of secrets kind of out now, or at least it's leaking out with.
Yes. So Isaac, the captain of the team, when the team was going through the ritual deleting photos that they had of themselves or other people in situations that they would not want released freely on the internet. Colin leaves the locker room to delete pictures that are, of other men that he wouldn't want the team to notice and find out that he's gay. And Isaac comes out. They have an argument. Isaac,
because he leaves. He leaves the locker room. Everyone else is doing it in the locker room. And he leaves.
Everybody else is doing it in the locker room. Isaac chases him out thinking he's trying to avoid doing it, grabs his phone, sees it, and we get like a grunt of just like, oh, and hands him his phone back and walks away. And we do know that the preview for the next episode does say, like, there's like two sentences, and one of them is like Colin and Isaac try to work through something or something. So like, it seems like there's going to be some kind of conflict between Colin and Isaac in this and the next episode. And my assumption and what I got the vibe from when Isaac looks at it is, I feel like he's disappointed that Colin wouldn't have told him.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if you take anything for like what Isaac was the one saying, like, everyone needs to delete those videos now.
Yes.
So I think he'd be more of like, okay, this isn't a big deal, but we're not going to change how we think about Colin, but you should have been able to be your complete self with your team.
Right. Like, I'm the captain. I feel like I failed because you haven't been able
you had to hide something from us.
Correct.
And from me as the captain. Yeah.
I think that's going to be a central conflict in the next episode.
I'm still conflicted on like how I think about like Ted and his ex-wife's relationship.
Yeah, they seem to kind of be hinting at like maybe she regrets her decision or something. I don't see them writing them getting back together. Though I will say, there is a strong negative push around the show this season, from a number of different angles. There's a lot of people that love the show in the past that don't like this season. Some of them just don't like it in general, but I think the majority of folks I've seen that don't like this season, it's because of the portrayal of Michelle and Dr. Jacob, because of how unethical that is. And there's a lot of people that believe that this writing and what they're doing is painting therapy in a bad light. And it's kind of like, you did such good work with Dr. Sharon in season two to kind of show how meaningful it can be to get over your fears of, you know, therapy and actually going and doing it and seeing the benefits of it. Like, a lot of people appreciated that in season two, whereas now it's like you're kind of eroding at that trust in that therapy process by showing like something that a therapist is instructed really to never do. Is he illegal in a number of states doing what he's done? What's crazy is I've seen all these arguments on criticizing the show broken down to like people studying the law of like, well, if they're from Kansas, it has to be 2 years. So like they're sitting there trying to like chronologically break down based off of the show's information, whether or not like Michelle and Dr. Jacob are breaking the law, or Dr. Jacob would be the one that's breaking the law. But lots of questions about like, what's that mean for consent? And
did you take that away? I'm not that deep into it to where I think like I'm thinking of that.
Well, see, I don't like, I think it's gross and icky, and I wish they hadn't have gone down that route. And I hope that there is a payoff to this, and I hope it wasn't just them in the writer's room trying to think of like, what's the worst, who's the worst person that Michelle could date. Somebody said, well, remember we talked about the therapist that she was going to in season one, why don't we make it the therapist? And everybody's like, oh yeah, that would suck. And I hope that's not the depth of thinking they have there.
I think it's also like he mentions in the first season like he felt like they're going to therapy. He felt like they ganged up on him. So it kind of makes sense to like, well, yeah, they were. He was ganging up on you because he was interested in your wife.
Yeah. So, you know, I hope that there's some payoff, and I hope there's consequences. Like, and I think, but it doesn't make me hate the show. But there are people that are saying like they really are disappointed in this, and that's a big key thing. But clearly, not everything is working between Michelle and Dr. Jacob, because, you know, something. I wonder if he did propose to her in Paris and she said no, and she's mad about it.
Yeah,
I'm thinking, because they go to Paris. Henry's with Ted in this episode, and Ted is convinced that he's taking her there to ask her to marry him. Everybody else tells Ted, you know, stop worrying about it. It hadn't happened yet.
I love it. It's like, don't freak out or don't flip out till you find out.
Yeah, don't flip out till you find out. Go Higgins. But when Michelle does return at the end of the episode, he notices that she doesn't have a ring on her finger, and
she kind of looks back at him when she's
he says, how was the trip? And she says, it was okay. And then she gives Dr. Jacob the cold shoulder when they're getting in the cab to leave after picking up Henry too. So
does Henry. He kind of like bypasses him.
Yeah, he doesn't want to like give him a high five or whatever. So Trouble in Paradise, I think. Then my other question for you, Matt, is how do you feel about Nate?
I mean,
this is another area where like I read the forums and Reddit and stuff that the fan base is split on.
So like I think clearly Nate's trying to recapture. I mean, he tries to form his own like Diamond Dogs in West Ham.
Well, I mean, offices. Like, what's your opinion on him?
Well, I think he just is.
Do you like him or not like him?
I do like him.
Okay, you're in my camp. I like Nate again. I like him again.
I like Nate. I think he's a good guy. I mean, he had a bad patch for sure, and he felt hurt, and he lashed out at the end of season two. But I think his comfort and his, you know, station where he kind of like feels comfortable is not being the villain. Like Rupert wants to be the villain, wants to be the bad guy.
No, I sense legitimate regret and remorse out of Nate.
And when he saw like Ted in the stands, I mean, I think he genuinely was like happy that his like friend, a former friend, was coming to watch him coach a game that he was involved in.
I also didn't get upset at him for how he replied to Rupert, because he's scared of Rupert.
Yeah.
And so like when Rupert was like, won't happen again, he was like, haha, I thought it was funny, which and then but then he was like, good, thank you. And I think he was just like, yeah, I probably would have replied the same way. Like I kind of don't want my boss mad at me.
He's kind of like didn't know, like he needed some advice about like his relationship, and he tried to like,
oh yeah, he tries to recreate the
Down Dogs, and you can tell like there's some things he took away from his time with Ted that stuck with him, and he's trying to recreate that, and which means he has like still a positive idea of like Ted and his tactics, both on and off the pitch.
Yeah. he's slowly realizing that he's not surrounded by like genuinely good people like was yeah. at Richmond.
You it's know? More like a corporation. Like we're just here to do a job. We're not your friends. And each, you know, it's different like with Ted and Richmond, how like they really do act like we're kind of like a family here.
Yeah, and it's because of what Ted fostered.
Yes. Yes, the players, the administration, ownership, all that, they kind of interact in a different way. And West Ham's more like a corporation, to where it's like it's very cold and you're a cog in a machine.
But I'm happy that good things are happening to Nate. I like that he has a girlfriend.
And I think it's good writing to be like, this is what we casted him as a villain at the end of season two, but we're going to show him as not being a villain. He's a person just like Ted's a person.
Yeah.
Has strengths and weaknesses and anxieties and everything that goes along with being a human in today's world.
Anything else you noticed about this one?
I was kind of disappointed in, well, not kind of, I was disappointed in like Roy's interaction with Keeley when he was like trying to be
controlling. Yeah.
He was like, who is he sent to? He's like, bro, doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is like, he knows immediately. He's like, well, he was like, how did that come out of my mouth? Like,
and it's part of his own insecurities about.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, it's, you juxtapose that with like how Jamie reacted or how he.
Well, yeah, and you find out it was Jamie's.
It was Jamie. But like his was, I'm sorry, it's my fault. You know,
I should have gotten rid of it. I didn't think about the emails.
It was my fault. I apologize. He didn't care about anything else. So, I mean, his character arc has been completely like, you went from like villain or heel in season one to completely almost like the protagonist by season three.
I love Jamie so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like to think of a character with the same name. It's almost like Jamie Lannister in Game of Thrones, how like how he was in season one.
Oh God, I hope it's not like that, because then Jamie Lannister goes back
to where, yeah. But at the end of it, his character is completely changed. He's not the villain.
He still picks Cersei.
Yes, but he also knighted Brienne, so we have positive things.
Yeah, but he's still, but I don't the know, fan I hate base, how they did Jamie.
Mostly the fan base is like, was on Team Jamie at the end of the season. And that's a crazy place to be whenever you think about the first episode was him pushing a kid out of a tower.
Yeah, while he's having sex with his sister.
Yeah, so it's like, it's a wild, like, character arc. And I think you have the same thing with like Jamie Tart, was like, he's obviously the heel in season one, but you're working on him, Ted's working on him the whole season up until the finale, and then into season two to now he's like, well, he's kind of like turned this corner, like he's a good guy, he's a decent human, and it's because of these people that he's surrounded himself with and he's chosen to be part of, and it's had an effect on his whole personality.
I love Jamie. He's the best.
He is.
He is the best.
I'm like, man, him and Keeley should get back together. I'm just.
I don't want that. I like them as friends.
I do. But, I mean, she's going through some stuff. right now with the breakup of Roy and then this is going on with
her current relationship. I think Keely should just be single right now.
And I think that would be a good commentary. I'm just like, a woman doesn't have to be in a relationship to be.
She doesn't have to go back to Roy. She doesn't have to go back to Jamie.
No, absolutely. She could just be solid in her like friendship with Rebecca, who's like, that's her one relationship that's like
consistent.
It's like her anchor. Yeah. And so like that is like what you can, it's like, it would be a good message as far as like writing wise to be like, women don't have to be in a relationship or be linked romantically to anyone. They can just have this like platonic, you know, deep friendship with each other.
Yeah.
And that's kind of their anchor.
There was one other thing that I was curious if you noticed about the episode.
What's that?
Did you notice at the very beginning what Ted had in his pocket when he tried to find some change for Henry to play pinball?
No, I didn't.
He had a green matchbook.
Oh. So from the like the psychic.
Correct. So I don't know if this is a misdirect, because the phone call and the interactions between Ted and Rebecca in this episode were very like almost sibling-y.
Yeah.
Where he's like asking her for help to get a private eye.
To
like go see what's going on in France, and where Michelle and Dr. Jacob are. Like, I don't know. It didn't feel romantic in any way. But yes, he pulled out a green matchbook out of his pocket at the beginning of the episode. So
yeah.
And that is part of the prediction from the psychic. And they've been throwing, like, he's the one that was texting her before she fell in the water.
I think it's like they're setting this up to be. And I got this feeling like she was talking to him. It was like, truly, you're right. It's not any romantic sense. It's very platonic. But it's almost like it's also they have a relationship and that they trust each other.
Yeah, but she said that is the psychic says she's going to be a mother.
Well, yeah, I think it's because, I mean, I generally believe it's because, like, Ted has a son.
So are you Ted Becca? Like, you think they're getting together?
I think they're leading it that way.
I think they're, I was convinced of it an episode ago.
But I was
this episode, I feel like it's a misdirect.
See, like, I wasn't convinced of it until this episode.
Gotcha.
And I think they're leading us down a path. Because you're absolutely right. They've kind of been misdirecting the whole time. Like, because like the Ted Rebecca whole like thing has been since season one been a fan thing.
Well, and it blew up in season two when Rebecca was on the dating site Banter, and there was a couple of times before you knew she was talking to Sam that they would cut to like Ted also being on his phone when she was like texting back and forth, and so like
yeah.
You were kind of like, everybody was like, oh my God, is it Ted? Like, is it Ted? And then it turned out to be Sam. So like, there's been these, like, they're almost trying to like pull these, the old rom-com trope of like the near misses.
Yeah. And you know, there's a whole thing about in Ted Lasso about rom-coms and tropes.
Yep.
And so,
and like, not seeing what's right in front of you. And
yeah. That kind of stuff. So
I don't know. We've got, this was episode 8, so we've got 4 episodes left of the show. It's not, this is the last season. So
yeah.
I still think there's going to be spinoffs, but this is going to be the last version of like what we know Ted Lasso as today.
I still think like I think at the end of he's going to leave the club.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure of that, because he's not, I mean, even when he's during these episodes, like, he's not in it 100%, really, from what we see, from what they're showing on the
I mean, they are winning.
Yeah, they're winning, but I think it's like his mind is always elsewhere throughout the what we get shown through the television show.
Yeah. Whether they don't show him doing much coaching anymore.
Yeah. I mean, except for winning the Amsterdam and he, you know,
But that wasn't even him coaching. That was him on a fake, you know, a fake toad trip. Venom trip.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a lot of and one thing I loved from the previous episode that we didn't talk about was like, the Kitman being like Beard was hilarious.
Oh yeah, it was one of the funniest things that's ever happened in the show. Yeah.
I loved every moment of that.
Do you know Do you know the Kitman's name?
I forgot it.
His first name's Will.
Will. Okay.
Do you know what his last name is?
No.
Kitman.
You're kidding me.
No, his name is Will Kitman. And he's the Kitman.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It's spelled K-I-T-M-A-N.
That's amazing.
Matt, what else are you watching?
Well, I mean, I'm fully engulfed in playing The Last of Us right now.
Okay.
It's like all my downtime is like I'm playing The Last of Us. That's what I do. I wanted to play like there's a new Star Wars video game came out.
Jedi Survivor. I haven't bought it yet because it was super glitchy. So
I haven't bought it yet because I've never played The Last of Us because I just got a PlayStation. I had an Xbox.
Did you play Jedi Fallen Order?
Yes.
Okay.
I played Jedi Fallen Order and I played Star Wars Battlefront and all those, but I've never played any of those games that were like exclusive to PlayStation because I didn't have one. So now I'm getting into like popular big, and I started with The Last of Us mostly because of the television show. So I'm kind of like 100% in on playing through that game. So I haven't really paid attention to anything else.
Gotcha. I have been so busy over the last 2 weeks that I've like not really watched much, but what I have been watching when I do have free time is I've been rewatching Rebels. So getting ready for the Ahsoka show. So I just finished season 3 of Rebels. So I have one more season left. And then Matt, I think here in the next couple of weeks, you and I are going to start watching Bad Batch. So
yeah, need to do that. It's a great time to do it during the summer. Presumably there won't be a lot of news or things going on that we need to talk about other than Star Wars or other things we're watching, which I don't really know what's going on in the summer.
Yeah. Well, I do need to get out and go see Guardians of the Galaxy. That's one thing I do need to do.
Yeah, I think I'm going tomorrow.
Lucky.
To go see
I'm going swimming tomorrow. That's what I am doing. My neighborhood pool opens. I'm going to go to the pool. Or not tomorrow, on Saturday.
Yeah. I think we'll take my daughters to Guardians of the Galaxy because we've seen the other two together. So take them to that. And everything I've heard, it's a really good film. So I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I expect it to be Guardians of the Galaxy. That's kind of all I expect it to be.
And it's
yeah.
like James Gunn's like last like Marvel film before he like goes 100% into DC, running DC. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Matt, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Matt_Workman, and you can find the podcast on Twitter as well at The Bear Den Pod.
And at TheBearDenPod.com.
Absolutely.
And what you can find me on Twitter at @the_Joe_Goodman. So yeah, that's where we sit right now, man. It's about to get hot, Matt, so be prepared. It's short season is upon us. It's gonna be in the 90s.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because it here in Central Texas it was like we had several days of like tornadoes, storms, hail, all that stuff, and I was trying to walk my dog storming, and I was like, you know, I was just looking forward to, like, I know there's going to be like a drought in the future, but I can't wait for those days where there's no rain. And that's me just talking from a person.
You're gonna hate it. You're gonna have crunchy grass, and it's I was just thinking, dry, like,
I have to be outside with my dog and the rain and tornado. I mean, I'm walking my dog, he's just playing with that. What are we doing here?
Yeah, that doesn't mean you can do. There's an in between. You don't have to have just grab it from there.
I know. I just want no rank.
Yeah, like every, just do rain once every 7 days. Like just yeah, rain on a few days.
I couldn't have not had all these old stuff.
All right, buddy. As always, Sick'em Bears and Attack of the Clones is the worst movie.
And never forget, I hate Sand.
Network. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.